ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, Insiders listeners. Just stopping by quickly to let you know about my new pod.
One of Australia's most baffling missing persons cases.
In 2007, four people vanished.
The family lived a bizarre alternative lifestyle.
It was dubbed a death cult. But after months of investigation, I don't think this story can be condensed into that simple headline. I'm Dominique Bayens, host of Expanse, the Nan Up 4. Binge all episodes now. Search for Expanse on ABC Listen and iView.
We're about 10 days out from a budget we're told will be both the most difficult and the most ambitious this government has so far produced. Apparently, some of the final decisions are still being made, so it's not too late for some last-minute advice in the ear of Treasurer Jim Chalmers and someone we know he listens to and respects because he appointed her to this job is the Chair of the Productivity Commission, Danielle Wood. And given the Treasurer has made it clear that boosting productivity is one of his priorities for this term of Parliament and this budget, well, who better to talk to than the Productivity Commissioner herself about what the government should and shouldn't be doing. I'm David Spears on Ngunnawal Country of Parliament House in Canberra. Welcome to Insiders on Background. Danielle Wood, great to talk to you ahead of the budget. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, David.
So I think I've probably asked you to explain or define productivity before one too many times. I won't do that again. But look, in my explanation, finding ways to boost outputs with the same inputs. Is that about right, to improve all of our standard of living?
Yeah, exactly right. Trying to improve the value of what we produce for a given level of inputs. And ultimately, that's what determines our living standards as a country.
Well, let's then go through some of the breadcrumbs that are being dropped ahead of this May 12 budget and see, from your perspective, whether they do add up to productivity gains or not. Changes to negative gearing and capital gains tax do look like they're coming. Now, exactly what they'll look like, we're yet to see. Will changing these tax breaks for property investors amount to tax reform in your view, and will they boost productivity necessarily?
I mean, certainly I think you can make a case to the extent that the combination of negative gearing and capital gains tax has distorted investment decisions somewhat. And, you know, this is a point that tax experts have been making since the Henry Review. The combination of those two, you know, has led to an attraction of leveraged investments, particularly in the property sector. So the extent that you are shifting the incentives to invest and removing some of those distortions, that can be a good thing. I guess the other point is that the extent you're reducing leakages to the income tax base that aren't serving a good policy purpose, if that allows you to reduce taxes on incomes overall, sort of, you know, base broadening, rate lowering type reform, those tend to be productivity enhancing reforms.
So, okay, well, 2 points you've made there. One, that you could remove some distortions. I guess the point here is, and when they talk about intergenerational equity, something that they want to do, getting more investors out, more owner-occupiers in, does that actually help housing supply? This is the big question. Is it actually going to hurt supply if you do this? What do you think?
Look, certainly, you know, the past work that I've seen on this point, and it's not something that the PC's looked at for a very long time, the overall kind of price impacts are pretty modest. Mm. It does somewhat shift the balance between new buyers, owner-occupiers and investors. But so you wouldn't expect a huge impact on supply overall if the price effect is low.
Okay. And look, I guess this will depend on how they actually do this. And there are all sorts of ways you could change these tax breaks. My understanding is there will be, and the Treasurer has even said, transitional arrangements. I think that's going to look like if you've already got an investment property, you're taxed under the existing rules. Once the rules change, your future gains will be taxed under the new rules. Would that sort of approach make the most sense to you?
Look, the questions of grandfathering are always tricky. Frankly, it doesn't actually make that much difference for negatively geared properties if you grandfather them, because they tend to become not negatively geared over time anyway. So people sort of naturally fallout.
But the capital gains.
It's harder for capital gains.
Yeah.
It is. I mean, we have a sort of pre-1986 system that exists there. It will add complexity into the tax system, I think it's fair to say, if you introduce another regime.
And the other point you raised there about how this could boost productivity is if you use the revenue that you raise here to lower other taxes. So are you saying that really is something that should happen? If revenue is to be found by getting rid of these tax or changing these tax breaks, you've got to use that to lower taxes elsewhere.
Look, I mean, I think for it to be a comprehensive tax reform package, that would make sense, that you are using this base broadening in order to reduce rates. Whether it has to happen simultaneously or whether that gives you the kind of capacity to give bigger income tax cuts over time, you know, I'm sure is a decision that the government will grapple with. Mm. But we would certainly, you know, hope to see these types of changes reduce pressure on income tax over time.
So if you don't do that, use the revenue to lower income taxes, can you call this tax reform?
Look, you can still be arguing about whether you're reducing distortions in the system. Mm. That's a form of reform, but I think the sort of more comprehensive tax reform looks like the base broadening, rate lowering.
I guess the concern about cutting income tax right now would be we're in an inflationary environment. Is now the best time to be doing that? Maybe what you'd hold off until closer to an election to reduce income taxes.
Those are decisions for politicians to make. Yeah. I definitely don't provide advice on those ones.
No, exactly. All right. But I take your point that really if we're talking about comprehensive tax reform, you're going to use whatever you raise here to do something on the income tax front.
Look, I think, you know, that's certainly the type of income tax reform that people have been talking about for a long time.
Look, the other breadcrumb that's being dropped a lot by the Prime Minister in particular is resilience. He talks a lot about resilience. Mm. And I think it is fair to say there's a real appetite and concern right now about greater self-sufficiency. We're in this fuel shock. We're being reminded once again of how reliant we are on imported fuel. We saw a lot of these concerns during COVID as well with supply chains. So does this mean government should be spending money, taxpayers' money, on ways to find more resilience when it comes to fuel, whether it's opening another refinery or having more fuel storage or even, you know, subsidising oil drilling? What makes sense to you here when we hear this language about resilience and fuel security?
Look, I mean, I think it's very understandable that people are talking about resilience and thinking about these issues. It's very live in people's minds right now. Productivity Commission's been thinking about this issue for a number of years, and it's certainly been at the forefront in the post-COVID world. I think it's fair to say that there are a small number of essential products, of which, you know, fuel is one of them, where we do start to think about, you know, what's the insurance policy? Because the costs, if supply chains get disrupted, can be high. And, you know, we have had an insurance policy in place for fuel. We've had 27 days of storage required. We've kept a couple of refineries on the go. I think, you know, it's a fair question. Could we or should we do more? But, you know, one thing that we've been really clear about is we have to be clear that insurance has a cost. You know, it will be expensive if we want to store more fuel onshore, if we want to open up another refinery. Those things come with pretty big price tags. And so you're constantly kind of making that judgment call, and ultimately politicians will have to make that judgment call about whether that is worth doing.
But you can understand the need to, for example, increase the fuel reserve. The opposition's put out an idea this week to do that to 60 days or thereabouts. It would come at a cost to all of us at the pump, a small cost. But for that insurance reason, you can understand why this might be a good idea right now?
Look, I can understand that the governments could make the judgment call that insurance is worth it. But, you know, we just have to be clear that it is a quite expensive thing to do. And the other thing I think it's really important for people to understand is, you know, even if we had that additional capacity right now, it wouldn't be, stopping high prices at the bowser. Mm. We're still subject to world markets setting the price. What it does, it gives us that peace of mind about the risk of running out and makes us less likely to run out if disruptions got really bad.
What about all the other things the government has been busy subsidising, bailing out, supporting? And a lot of this sits under its Future Made in Australia label. Things like support for copper and aluminium refineries, steelworks and so on. Is this really a future made in Australia, or is it old-fashioned industry support?
Look, I mean, I think the resilience case is certainly less clear when it comes to those types of sectors. They're not essential in the same way that fuel is, although some of them have been bandied under that sort of resilience banner. I mean, when the government put out its Future Made in Australia framework, there was a Treasury paper which, you know, set out some clear criteria, I think, for thinking about support.
Mm.
And it tends to be, you know, these types of supply chain security arguments, the sort of insurance policy for essential industries is one category. The other is around green transition and, you know, helping build technologies that will become economic in future as green premiums tend to exist. So, you know, it's a fairly strict set of guidelines where you can think these industry policy arguments might make sense. You know, I think there's a question mark about whether these types of supports would meet those thresholds.
Yeah, but I mean, if it's simply keeping steel and aluminium production in Australia so that we have some capacity to make steel and aluminium, do we need to support that? Does government need to support that? Or do you think we can get by relying on imports of those metals?
Look, I mean, ultimately that's a question that government has to grapple with, but I think, again, being really clear on the costs, you know, these are not industries that are probably the economics is going to fundamentally change. So, you know, if we want to do this, we are probably on the hook for the long haul.
We talk a lot about tax here, but there is another side to the budget and to the fiscal debate, and that's spending. Now, the big pre-budget announcement from the government came last week, and that was the changes to the NDIS to bring down the growth rate from about 10% at the moment a year to 2%. Mm. It's ambitious. They're saying about 300,000 people by the end of the decade will either be kicked off or denied access to the scheme as they change the rules. The NDIS, of course, people might remember, was originally a recommendation of the Productivity Commission back in 2011, before your time. The idea was for a scheme much smaller than it's turned out to be. What do you make, Danielle Wood, of where the NDIS has grown to and now these plans to rein it back in?
Look, you're absolutely right. It was a PC recommendation. And I think what we saw at the time was an environment of supports for people with disability that was fragmented, to some degree unfair. It mattered where you were. So the NDIS was a scheme that was set up to ensure that those with significant permanent disability would get the supports they need and the individualised supports they need. So I think it has been a really important and transformative scheme. That said, you know, I think the government is absolutely right to say it has gone some degree off the rails, and clearly a 10% growth rate isn't sustainable over time. I think the sort of shift in eligibility that the government is talking about, which is you know, moving more to functional assessments rather than diagnosis-based assessments, you know, brings it back closer to the original model envisaged by the PC. And then I think, you know, the other sort of set of shifts is around making sure that the markets for services are working well, and things like registering providers and things like that, I think, you know, really sit with that goal.
I mean, the NDIS, everyone will know, you know, somebody who's benefited from the NDIS. It has been life-changing. Mm-hmm. But has it delivered the productivity gains that we were told at the outset this would deliver?
Look, I think some of the gains that we anticipated around workforce participation haven't materialised in quite the same way as might have been anticipated. I don't think it's well understood, you know, why that is.
Yeah, I was going to ask why. Is that unclear, is it?
I mean, it's not something that I have seen specific research on. I think there have been some gains, but, you know, it may be that as the scheme's lost focus, you know, on helping those with the most severe disability, some of those gains anticipated just haven't been realised.
Are there other areas of the budget the government should be looking at when it comes to spending, or is this enough in and of itself? Are there any easily identifiable areas where you think they should be winding back spending?
Look, it's not something that we have been asked to look at. I mean, I think this was probably the most pressing and obvious need, and, you know, credit to the government for, you know, trying to find a way through on it. You know, I think there are other parts of the budget, you know, whether it's health, whether it's aged care, now defence, that are growing rapidly as well. And so those are the areas where you would expect, you know, governments to look carefully and try and make sure that we are delivering spendingly as efficiently as we can. Mm.
What about things like the home battery subsidies and electric vehicle tax breaks and these sort of things to encourage the energy transition along? The other side of politics reckon some of this has gone too far. From a productivity lens, are these sorts of pro-climate spending measures worthwhile?
I mean, what we've said on all kind of climate measures is, you know, you want to be getting the best bang for your buck. Certainly the EV tax break, which is one that we have specifically looked at, you do pay a pretty high price per tonne of carbon abated. It's because it's not, you know, particularly well targeted or an efficient sort of signal. And what we know, of course, is people are rushing out to buy EVs at the moment. There's a lot of demand, actually more demand than supply at the moment.
So do you still need the tax break?
Yeah, I think that's a very fair question. It wasn't a sort of great policy to begin with, and probably even less of a case for it now.
Okay, fair enough. Now, apart from all of these things that are being discussed in the lead up to the budget, what are your ideas? What would be your wish list, Danielle Wood, in terms of what you would like to see or not see in this May 12 budget?
Look, I think, you know, probably a couple of big themes on the productivity package. And, you know, first thing to say is really excellent that we have a treasurer talking about productivity and putting a productivity package in the budget. I think, you know, a really big push on the regulatory environment. When we did our reviews for the government last year on what to do on productivity, probably one theme came back at us from business, from not-for-profits, from individuals even, more than any other, which was the sort of the challenge of the regulatory burden. So we'd love to see a strong package there from government. And I think that's some combination of, you know, a really strong statement of intent to reduce regulatory burden, probably coupled with a target, some changes to the regulatory infrastructure, and then some areas where, you know, either there's immediate announcements or governments propose to do deep dives to really kind of pull back the regulatory hairballs that have built up in corners of our economy.
Are there particular areas of the corners of the economy? Is it housing? Is it, you know, construction? I mean, or is it really right across the economy where, what was your word, hairballs of red tape have really built up?
Look, I mean, housing is a pretty obvious one. We did some work last year showing, you know, productivity in housing constructions declined 12% over 30 years. So whereas normally we expect productivity, you know, we get better at doing things over time, we've actually got worse in housing. And one of the key reasons is we've layered in approvals and regulations at every step of the way, which is just making it slower and therefore less commercial to build things. So that's definitely one I'd look at. I think electricity retail regulation, telecommunications regulation. And then you do have some cross-cutting challenges. You know, I'd point to a growing suite of, you know, what I call sort of social environmental regulation, climate reporting, modern slavery, gender pay gap reporting. You know, all of those are also adding to the regulatory burden, and we want to make sure that they are actually delivering on, you know, the objectives of those.
So we've gone too far, you're concerned, with a lot of those efforts to make sure that government and business is ticking all those boxes?
Well, certainly we know and we hear all the time that the compliance costs are very large. Mm. And so I think we need to really have a serious look at that.
Look, that's interesting. Red tape is your priority. There is one idea that you did put forward in December of last year for a new hybrid corporate tax system. The idea here was to, I think it was a lower company tax rate of 20% for small and medium businesses, and then a 28% rate for larger firms, and a 5% net cash flow tax for all companies. It doesn't sound like the government's picking this one up, certainly not now. Are you disappointed this one hasn't taken off?
Look, I mean, I think it really started an important conversation, which is the challenge of investment. In Australia, it is a big part of the productivity challenge, as we see investments down 3% since the as a share of GDP since the global financial crisis, and the tax system is one contributor to that. You know, red tape doesn't help either, so they actually sort of come together really as a productivity package. But, you know, what we were trying to do with that proposal was to try and find ways that wouldn't hit the budget, that would stimulate investment. Also in that report, we did say, you know, there are other things you could do that would come at some budgetary cost, that would give you even bigger investment gains. And so, you know, I think that's an important conversation. I understand if in the current environment, in the current budgetary position, that, you know, might not be something that the government can do at this point in time. But I really hope that that idea and the importance of shift in that corporate tax system to try and incentivize investment is one that, you know, government will continue to look at.
It sounds like, well, it's reported that instead they'll go for the simpler option, and I guess this one really only helps the smaller businesses, is the instant asset write-off, which has been on a 12-month. They're going to make that permanent, it's reported. Does that make much difference, or is that really down the small and medium-sized firms?
I mean, it certainly depends on exactly how they design it, but the way it sort of has been, it's very much targeted at smaller businesses, it's targeted at smaller investments. One of the big challenges that we identified in the tax system is newer, more dynamic businesses really scaling up. And, you know, particularly as we look around the economy, we're missing some of the bigger capital investment, the bigger digital investments that we want firms to see. So I don't think that would be, you know, picking up some of those areas where we really want to sharpen the incentives for investment.
And look, just a final question, Danielle Wood, for those who are really, you know, feeling the pinch at the moment with inflation where it is, fuel prices driving a lot of that, and hoping that this budget will offer them, you know, some more cost of living relief. Where do you sit on this debate? When inflation's high, handing out money is not necessarily going to help, but there's obviously a political imperative to give people some support. What should the message be to those who are really feeling the pinch right now?
I mean, what I would say is action on productivity reform in the long term is actually going to improve your standard of living more than anything else. You know, the Reserve Bank governor talks about is that productivity is the speed limit on the economy. If we can up that speed limit, if we can become more productive as a nation, that increases our capacity to grow our incomes without driving up inflation. And so I think, you know, keeping an eye on that longer term picture is really critically important.
Productivity Commissioner Danielle Wood, always good to talk to you, particularly ahead of a budget, but thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, David.
All right, we'll have more on this Sunday morning. Hope you can join us for Insiders on ABC TV, and PK will be back in the Politics Now feed on Monday. Bye for now.
You're making us all feel very excited about being here.